Welcome back to the Roundtable. The documentary film The Mask You Live In follows boys and young men as they struggle to stay true to themselves while negotiating America's narrow definition of masculinity. The film debuted at Sundance this year and will screen at the Berkshire International Film Festival on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Jennifer Siebel Newsom is a CEO, filmmaker, and advocate. She wrote, directed, and produced the 2011 award-winning documentary Misrepresentation, and then launched the Representation Project, a nonprofit organization established to awaken people's consciousness, inspire individual and community action, and ultimately transform culture. The Mask You Live In is her second film, and she joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks so much.
So your first film, Misrepresentation, examined how the media contributed to underrepresentation of women in positions of power. And as a result of making and releasing that film, you co-founded the Representation Project. What is the mission of the Representation Project?
The Representation Project's mission is really, in short form, is really to awaken people's consciousness, change their behavior, and ultimately transform culture. And we basically use film and media to inspire people to overcome limiting notions around gender, race, class, sexual orientation, age, and circumstance so that everyone has the capacity to fulfill their human potential.
Not a small order of business. And how did the subject of masculinity become the next subject you would tackle in a film?
So when I was traveling the world with Misrepresentation, which premiered at Sundance in 2011, I was in places as far away as Abu Dhabi and Singapore and as close to home as our neighborhood schools and local businesses. And what I found in the Q&A was that people were always so grateful and appreciative for what we were doing for women and girls. But inevitably, there would be one or two people in the audience who would ask, but what about our boys? Isn't there a boy crisis going on? And how can we help our boys be part of the solution instead of the problem? And when I heard the word boy crisis, I was actually pregnant with my son at the time. I was very alarmed because I couldn't imagine raising a son who was part of the problem, and also was alarmed with what was really going on. And so we started delving into the research, and what we found was that compared to girls, boys were more likely to be prescribed meds, more likely to be diagnosed with behavior disorder, more likely to be expelled or flunk out of school, more likely to binge drink, more likely to commit a violent crime, and boys were more likely than girls to take their own lives. And this really alarmed me, and I knew from these statistics that we needed to investigate this further. And what we found is that, our boys are suffering, just as our girls have been suffering, from these limiting notions or narratives around gender. And that at the end of the day, we as a society need to take responsibility because we too, just as we've been failing our girls, are also failing our boys and men.
Where does the problem start?
Starts in utero. No, it does. It kind of starts right out of the womb. It starts with the messaging. It starts with the, be a man, don't cry. Oh, he's fine. When the poor boy is in pain, and whereas if a girl's in pain, we tend to run to them and feel this need to, protect them or take care of them. But it starts really, really early on. We have to, as a society, recognize that, some studies actually indicate that boys are more sensitive at birth than girls, but that we socialize that sensitivity out of them. And we have to break down these limiting narratives that we're feeding both genders. And I'm a firm believer that if we can reframe what it is to be a man, and if we can expand the definition of healthy masculinity or just masculinity in general, to come back to all of the good masculine traits of respect, integrity, dignity, responsibility, inner strength, and not just pressure masculinity to be about the dominance, the control, the power, the aggression, which are these sort of hyper-masculine or extreme masculine traits. So if we can kind of rebalance masculinity in a sense and help our boys to stay true to themselves and help them not repress their emotions, and if we can model healthy masculinity in society, then we're going to do justice to not just our boys and men, but also our girls, because we all live in a masculine-dominated society. And really, I think we're at a point in time where the women's movement and equality can only go so far without men looking at themselves and recognizing their role in the oppression of women and girls, and how if they don't change, we can't change further.
A lot of the film deals with men realizing that they're part of the problem, have been part of the problem, or if they were a less stereotypically masculine man, coming to terms with that and being themselves. You speak with some grown men who had to get there through a lot of time and a lot of personal trauma. Also, there are a few scenes set with men who have, in a prison, who have murdered other people and are dealing with that. How did you decide to include that in the film? How did you go about gaining access to those prisoners?
So I was introduced to these prisoners at San Quentin through the organization Human Rights Watch, and I was blown away when I met these men. I mean, these men are truly incredible human beings. They were juvenile offenders, okay? I mean, many of them were immigrants, minorities, latchkey kids who basically were bullied and beat up, joined gangs to find family, and ultimately were in the wrong place at the wrong time, involved in petty criminal activity where unfortunately there was a gun and they were either the accomplice or associated in that situation. I'm not saying what they did is in any way less wrong.
Right.
We have to help our youth that are in those situations before something horrible happens, like obviously a murder. But these young men have spent 20, 30 years in prison, and they have gone inside and done work on themselves. And I was so impressed with their humanity, and to a certain extent, because of the work they've had to do, looking at themselves and repenting and committing to a better life, a better way. They're more whole than a lot of people that are walking out on the streets in civilian life. And it's a shame that we've, unfortunately, in so many cases, neglected these young men who got off to a rocky start because they didn't have the support, the role modeling, the mentorship to be, you know, healthy, whole human beings. And now that they are, I just felt like their stories needed to be told. And it also tied in with the very powerful shame and humiliation culture that so many, not just young men, but adult men, it's the trigger, right? Shame and humiliation is a trigger for so many men. And we have to really look at that. We have to address it. We have to acknowledge it. And it's something that was important for me to unveil in the story. And ultimately, it led to the climax, the violent climax that you see in the documentary.
You mentioned that you have a young son now, that you had a son in utero when you were touring with the last film. Are you and your husband and the people you surround your son with all aware of this, having worked on and been close to the film and really making an effort? Are you able to think about it all the time as you raise your own child?
Definitely. I mean, it was easier for me to raise, I have two daughters and a son. To a certain extent, it's been easy for me to raise daughters because I just raised them the way, largely, you know, to a large extent, the way my parents raised me, minus a few things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because I was raised as a tomboy, as an athlete, yes, I was feminine, and perhaps there were pressures in the community that we lived in that on the femininity side that were too much. But, my daughters, I'm raising them to be whole, healthy human beings. With my son, similarly raising him to be a whole, healthy human being. I mean, some of the things we do that I'm proud of because we're conscious, because we've had conversations around this, is that we really listen to him and kind of, you know, try and follow his lead in terms of the things he's interested in, not shame him for wanting to do things that his big sisters are doing. You know, care and caregiving are important human traits. And, you know, unfortunately, we only really as a society have been giving our girls dolls or telling our girls that it's okay for them to take care of baby dolls when like a new baby's born. And I noticed when the youngest, Brooklyn, was born that, you know, that Montana had a doll, but Hunter didn't. And so I bought Hunter a doll, and, you know, and Hunter was cute and he kind of cared for that doll for a little bit. And at one point he bit the doll's hand off. I don't know why, but you know, it was sweet. He was learning to take care of something the way his older sister was. And, you know, I've taken him out to barns and stables to groom horses, and he really enjoys that, to learn that, you know, caregiving and caretaking and being kind to not just humans but animals, that that's a human trait, that that's, you know, that we want to nurture that and nurture him to be gentle and loving and kind. And then he's, as so many of our boys are, very creative. And so, you know, he likes to get in the kitchen and cook a bit. And so we're trying to nurture that as well. And on the other side, yeah, he's very physical and active, and he's out there with his sticks and his trucks and his this and that. And so we're just allowing him to kind of be who he is. And it's fun to watch. And he's full. He's rich. He's human, you know, and I just want to keep nurturing that and not stifle any one part of himself.
Your husband is Lieutenant Governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Through him, through your proximity to the political world through him, do you see the way that politics contributes to masculinity problems and the power structure struggle?
Oh, sure. Our next film, The Great American Lie, delves a bit into the, and it potentially could be a series, but into the sort of social, political, economic, and legal ramifications of the U.S. being a dominator society, one with a value system that predominantly leans in the direction of the masculine traits of the power, the dominance, the control, the aggression. And you see it with the infighting. You see it with the bipartisanship, you know, the win-at-all-costs sort of stubborn mentality that you're seeing a bit in Congress. So you definitely see it, and it's ugly, and it's so unnecessary. There's so many ways that I think this hyper-masculine value system is represented and institutionalized in the political sphere, and it's something that we have to work on as a society.
The Mask You Live In will screen as part of the Berkshire International Film Festival on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Mehewi. Links to more information about the festival, the film, and the representation project are posted online at wamc.org/roundtable.